And you're back. The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And we're going to be speaking shortly with Stephen Gowans of gowans.wordpress.com. And I guess I could tell you again, the Rwandan.com is a website you can use. Paul Roussa-Sabagina of, people know him from Hotel Rwanda, his story of the protecting people at the Mille Collines Hotel. 1,200 people survived the war and massacres that took place. He played a really courageous role in that and was dramatized in a film, but he has a foundation. It's the Paul, I'm looking for the correct address. Oh, yeah, it's the HRR Foundation, HRRFoundation.org. And he's on the record, by the way, commenting on this recent assassination in South Africa. I urge people to go to his site because he's speaking out on the subject, and many people speaking out. We're joined now by Steve Gowans. Are you there, Stephen?
I'm here. Hello, Phil.
Thank you for joining us. You've been writing a number of really important pieces, in my opinion. I hope people go to gowans.wordpress.com. Let's start with the most recent one. You discuss the myths that are developing, and I guess this is kind of a continuing issue of we have a media that is always kind of reassuring us that we're on the top of a shining hill or something of that nature, and all of the world wants to be like us. And so the story of the Soviet Union is, well, it didn't prove out. It was inferior, and people are much happier now, and they've found freedom, et cetera. So we can notice in the Ukraine, we're seeing all the happiness there. Any rate, but you list seven myths, and I want to start. The first one is that a popular support, there was no support for the USSR, as we used to call it. And you say that's not really true.
No, it's not. In 1991, 9 months before the Soviet Union's demise, Soviet citizens went to the polls to vote on a referendum which asked whether they were in favor of preserving the USSR. And the vast majority, over three-quarters of them, said yes. But, I mean, that's... Well,
boy, that leads to a question, doesn't it? They did. They took that... It was a referendum. It was credible. And yet they didn't get their wish.
No, it seems they were denied their wish by the democratic reformers.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it seems that what people want is not what the democratic reformers wanted.
Yeah. So what was that number again? How many wanted to preserve it?
Three quarters.
Wow. of course, we'll come back, I guess, to this matter of how we have this contradiction with the statistical evidence and the polls don't seem to bear out these myths. So the second myth is that they hated their leader from the 1930s and the World War II leader and close friend of William Lyon Mackenzie, King, and Franklin Roosevelt and Charles de Gaulle, Joseph Stalin, that they hated him.
Yeah.
How much did they hate him?
Oh.
Or do they hate him?
Curious. I have a book right here called 100 Great Tyrants of the 20th Century. And who should be on the cover but of Stalin?
He won that one.
Yeah, certainly in the West. But, I mean, there have been a number of polls taken that suggest that Russians don't share that view. So, you know, in 2009, there was a Russian TV channel that spent 3 years polling over 50 million Russians to find out who, in their view, were the greatest Russians of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Stalin didn't come in first. And he didn't come in second, but he did come in third.
Who was first?
Who was first was Nevsky, who successfully repelled an attempted Western invasion of Russia in the 13th century. And then the second place was Stolypin, who was the prime minister under Tsar Nicholas, II, and he enacted agrarian reforms.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting poll that was cited by Richard Pipes, who's the Harvard historian and vehement anti-communist.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting very upset about what was happening in Russia, 10, 14 years after the demise of the Soviet Union. And he wrote an article in Foreign Affairs in which he reviewed a lot of the polling work that had been done in Russia. And he cited one poll in which Russians were asked to list the 10 greatest men and women of all time. Not only Russians, but 10 greatest men and women of any country of all time. And he was quite irritated by the results, because Russians, they chose Peter the Great first, Lenin second, Pushkin third, and Stalin fourth.
Gosh, Lenin beat out Stalin. So his cure, I assume, would be more CNN, or?
I think at this point, Pipes threw up his hand and he said the Russians were hopeless.
Yeah. I wonder, this poll idea of approaching, in fact, popular opinion is never actually consulted, right? I mean, so ideas about who is great in the eyes of the broad mass of the population is really never, in terms of policy, relevant. Those who know better will tell us.
Mm-hmm.
But World War II leaders all seem to fare rather well, because they're the guys who defeated the greatest menace that anybody ever saw,
mm-hmm.
Nazism.
Yes.
And so the people remember it, though the paid pundits, they work on our memories. Don't remember that. Or forget I told you that. And incidentally, I could mention, it wasn't Time magazine that made Stalin Man of the Year?
Yes.
Is that going down the memory hole somewhere? Or that?
But also, I mean, the favored view in the West now is that Stalin must be regarded by Russians as someone who victimized them.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to regard him as someone who elevated the country and made it into a great power.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to share the view of one of Stalin's biographers, who wasn't sympathetic to Stalin, but nevertheless said, when he came to power, Russia had the wooden plow. When he died and left power, Russia had the atomic pile.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly the case that...
A broad education system, medical for the people.
Yeah,
a bunch of things.
The country made significant advances in the time during which Stalin was leading the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Russians recognize that. And
By the way, they have a similar problem coming now. We just had the celebration, 120th. I know celebration is a rather strong word, isn't it? We had the marking of the 120th anniversary of the birth of Mao Zedong. His stock, actually, despite the West deciding he was a monster, stock seems to be rather high in the People's Republic of China.
Yes.
Let's put it this way, very high.
Which perhaps accounts for why the accounts of him in the West become increasingly negative over time. I mean, he just becomes increasingly demonized.
Mm-hmm.
The accounts, just become ridiculous and completely removed from reality.
Yeah. On that, by the way, a similar story could be told about the development of China and the rapid development, which came under the leadership of his party, him and the party.
Mm-hmm.
But another issue I want to ask you about in relation to that, and I want to ask all these other questions. You have other myths I know that I want to talk about. But you notice that Putin is now sort of like in the West considered Ivan the Terrible. Now, recently, in September of this year, if there's one person who saved the world from a new war, a bombing of Syria, and an unknown consequence, it was Putin. And yet our media... If you were to put Putin equals, it would go Putin equals Stalin equals Ivan the Terrible equals Alexander Nevsky, right?
Right.
They're all, because they're Russian, there's something wrong with these guys.
Yes, because they're Russian and they don't go along with...
Except for Stalin, who, of course, was a Georgian, but they allowed him to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Bonaparte was a Corsican and Stalin a Georgian.
Right. Well, I guess you could say it's not so much that they're Russian, that they don't share the West's foreign policy orientation.
Enthusiasm for itself.
I mean, you could, certainly Gorbachev is a Russian who is widely admired in the West and widely reviled in Russia.
Yeah, I noticed his numbers. His numbers are somewhere around 2% or less in terms of public approval.
Yeah.
Wałęsa's numbers in Poland are somewhere around, hovering around 1%.
But still widely admired.
Widely admired. Somebody might want to look into why that would be. Now, you say another myth is that they've tasted freedom, that they prefer it. What do the numbers show about that? That's italicized, prefer freedom.
Yeah, do they prefer? No, they don't. And I mean, that's the whole idea, that the Soviet Union was a terrible, terrible, repressive place with a creaky economy and, a tyrant as its leader. And people are happy that it's fallen apart and reached its demise. But, going back to Pipes cited a poll that showed that 3/4 of Russians regret the Soviet Union's demise. So hardly what you'd expect of people who have been reportedly delivered from this supposedly repressive state. According to a just-released Gallup poll, so for every citizen of... They looked at 11 former Soviet republics, including the largest one, so Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, and so on. For everyone that thinks the breakup of the Soviet Union benefited their country, 2 think it did harm.
2-1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You look at it in terms of do they think they're better off today? Nope.
Yeah.
Some think they're better off, but most think that they're not better off. And there's certainly some data that suggests that, indeed, objectively, they're not better off either.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there was a large-scale study that was reported in The Lancet, the prestigious British medical journal, that showed that the transition to capitalism in the former USSR precipitated a sharp drop in life expectancy. So male life expectancy in Russia, for example, was 67 years in 1985, during the years of the Soviet Union. In 2007, it was less than 60 years. And life expectancy plunged 5 years between 1991 and 1994. So, I mean, the transition to capitalism produced countless premature deaths. And the study also showed that in only a little over half of the ex-communist countries, that the pre-transition life expectancy levels have been regained. So that transition...
Almost all lost. And it's only... And when you say regained, yeah, they stabilized around that number.
Yeah, in only a little over half the cases.
Yeah. By the way, something should be mentioned, I suppose. I mean, I have to ask you: is that I noticed that the one of the largest, if not the largest, party in today's Russia is the Communist Party of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Might be an indicator of something as well.
That reminds me of another interesting poll. This one asked Russians, this was in 2003, it asked them, what would you do if the communists seized power? And this is another one that Pipe cited, and he tore out his hair when he reported this one. So
you owe a lot to Pipes.
Pardon me?
I said, you owe a lot to Pipes. He's going to love you citing him.
So almost a quarter said, well, if the communists came to power, I would support them. 20% said, well, I'd collaborate with them. Almost 30% said, well, okay, I'd accept it. So for every Russian who would actively oppose a communist takeover, 4 would support it or collaborate with it, and 3 would accept it. So, I mean, this isn't what you would expect if you think Russians are glad to get out from underneath what we're told was the burden of communist rule.
Yeah, you provide an undertow against most editorial writers that we who are earning their money by telling us the opposite, of course. We're speaking to Steve Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. It's a wonderful article. It's very, very nicely documented, and they usually cite people like Mr. Pipes, who would rather he wasn't being cited, but that's the way the ball bounces. You know, I want to mention, Stephen, that I recently was looking into problems in Poland, and I came across an odd fact that Mr. Gierek's, he was the last communist leader, I believe, in Poland, his son has now been elected to the European Parliament, and if you go to his site, there's a big picture of Dad. So I assume there's a lot of Poles thinking along the same lines as those Russians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, no, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they did...
Some people do care about life expectancy and a chance to have a job and to stay out of the cold.
And there was an interesting study that was done in the 80s using World Bank data. It was an academic study, and what it did is it looked at life quality or like caloric intake, mortality rate, longevity, etc., comparing the socialist countries as they were then with capitalist countries at equal levels of economic development. And what they found was that the level of human development was far better in the socialist countries than it was in comparable capitalist countries. And it was equal to what it was in the richest capitalist countries.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did, obviously, was they took account of the fact that many of the socialist countries were still lagging the capitalist, or some of the capitalist countries in terms of economic development, and didn't have the resources that, say, the United States or the UK or Canada would have had to provide for human development, but they did better with what they had than the capitalist countries did. And I think that many people have discovered that that was going on. I mean, now that they've lost this kind of socialist orientation, they discovered that this wasn't a transition from what you had in Poland to what they had in the United States.
There seems to be that. I'm really glad you raised that point, because they're debating this now in Ukraine. And one of the more interesting or helpful articles I saw was an East European writing, and he was some kind of like a business journal. But he said Bulgaria has already done the, made nice with the European Union, and nothing has happened. Nothing. In other words, you were poor before you made that wonderful decision, and now you're poor. and by the way, since you thought that was your only solution, you seem to be out of solutions.
Yes. And the same thing has happened with East Germany. I mean, the complaint was always, well, you know, those East Germans, they all want to go to the West because there's more prosperity there, and which is true, and because they were politically repressed. And that wasn't the reason they wanted to go. But has anything changed since the fall of the Berlin Wall? No. I mean, it's still East. Those who live in the East go to the West because the West was always the more prosperous part of the country.
Yeah, they've only produced politicians in East Germany. Isn't Merkel from? Is he from East Germany?
Yeah, that's right.
And she's now giving advice, by the way, to the prize fighter named Klitschko in Ukraine. All of her advisors help him. This is Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. Wonderful articles. And I want to make sure we touch on the Zimbabwe matter, because Mugabe, there are people here are saying Nelson has passed and he was so wonderful, but this other guy, he should learn and disappear because he's not up to Nelson. But you point out that in Zimbabwe, they've introduced policies that caused the West to demonize the leadership there. And you mentioned, I like the detail, a New Dawn mining company, Canadian company.
Uh-huh.
And you suspect that the opinion of these mining companies from the West influenced the way our media look at Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah. Well, I was interested in this because, you know, Robert Mugabe and Nelson Mandela have kind of become foils. So Mandela was the good liberation hero, Mugabe the bad liberation hero. So you can ask, why is it that Mugabe was bad and Mandela is presented as good? And I think a lot of it has to do with the extent to which the liberation projects in South Africa and Zimbabwe have threatened white and Western economic interests, and hardly at all in South Africa, but considerably in Zimbabwe. So you can see the Globe and Mail had an article about this, about how wonderful Mandela was and how evil Mugabe is, and they mentioned the New Dawn Mining Company, which is a Canadian-owned company. And what the Zimbabwe government has recently done is introduced a plan to indigenize mining companies or their mineral resources. And by indigenize, they simply mean that Zimbabweans have to have a majority share or majority stake in the company. And the Canadian government, the Canadian press are throwing up their hands and saying that this is a terrible thing. But it's not something that's really unusual for developed countries to do, and it's also something that Canada has been involved in as well.
Yeah, I think that the revolutionary Trudeau had ideas like that. Certainly the founding fathers, as they call them, U.S., had opinions like that.
They did, yes. A number of countries have had these kinds of indigenization programs. They don't call them that, but, you know, a certain percentage of this company has to be Canadian-owned. The telecom industry in Canada has that kind of regulation. It says so much of the telecom industry must be Canadian-owned. So there's nothing unusual about this, but Mugabe is presented as some kind of demon, you know, who's departing from orthodox economic policy by introducing this kind of program.
Failure to follow orders. That's a very serious crime. Stephen Gowans, it's great always to talk to you. Those are great, wonderful articles. I hope people go gowans.wordpress.com. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.